Welcome to Golf and the Good Life, your guide to golf travel across the pond. I'm DJ Jones, he's Connor Evers, and today we are returning to our Legendary Links series with a visit to a course that, well, it might hold the number one spot for both of us in Scotland, though I kind of feel like we said that about Royal Dornoch, but nevertheless, here we are. Connor, what is the good word up at HMB HQ?
Thanks, TJ. Appreciate the introduction. And all is good. We are, give or take, around a month away from the 2024 golf travel season. So we, as well as our members, are looking forward to traveling across the pond and experiencing golf and the good life over there. So we're just kind of doing the final touches for our first groups that plan on traveling around to mid-ish or so of April of next month. So looking forward to that. The other kind of big factor of this is Royal Portrush just recently opened for 2025 booking. So it's very exciting as well. And the other pairing of County Down will open here hopefully soon as well. So looking forward to that too. And then this month, end of this month, we should, fingers crossed, receive our old course guaranteed time allotment. It may be into the early April as well, but more than likely it will be the end of this month. So I know our members that have gotten on top of this many months and even around a year ago, really looking forward to officially receiving those times. So that's kind of what is going on here at HQ, DJ.
Well, that's all exciting stuff. And for people out there listening who might be traveling in 2024, today may very well be essential listening because we are headed back to our Legendary Links series for a visit to Prestwick. There's a pretty good case to be made that we should have started at Prestwick, given that it's the birthplace of the Open Championship. But Prestwick, it's just one of those places that is truly beloved. It manages to forge a strong emotional connection with visitors in a way that few places across the pond can replicate. But, you know, before we dive into, say, the history and all the nuances of the course and so forth, Connor, you're one of those big admirers of Prestwick. What is it about this place that just manages to rope in so many people?
Absolutely. Appreciate that, DJ. And yes, it is, I have my list of kind of favorites from across the pond and here in the States and all over the world. And, you know, every time I kind of do my rankings after I play some more, Prestwick always comes up to the top. So Prestwick actually is my number one favorite golf course in the entire world. It is a fantastic place. First time I was able to play it was in 2017, and I did a solo trip to Scotland. I stayed in the Golf View B&B right across the street, and my room had a window that had a view of the links. And I didn't do anything the night before I played. I actually went to the Red Lion pub, which I know we'll get into a little bit, but I just hung out that night and fell asleep with the sunset going down across the links. So had that kind of experience prior to playing. And as you probably could tell on the podcast, and you know, my love is quirky golf. If I can get away as far away from how American golf is played, I'm all about it. And which we'll talk about here, but Prestwick has some quirkiness to it. And I think that's what makes it very unique, why I love it so much. And you either have like a love-hate relationship with it. If you think it's going to be a normal golf course, you're going to be dead wrong. And you probably won't enjoy it if you think it's going to be. You're going to have to think outside the box, especially in a couple of the holes we'll get into today. You got to put a lot of trust in your caddy because you're going to think that they have two heads, some of these lines that they're giving you off the tee box. Like, you want me to go there? You want me to hit a 3-iron off this from on a par 5? You know, stuff like that. It's so awesome. You know, it's one of those places I've been fortunate to play it a handful of times. And every time I go back, I learn something new about the course, a different line. Oh, you know, next time I play it, I could play it off here or what have you. I think it just always, you're always thinking, and it's, you just have to be strategic throughout. So I absolutely love it. If I could be a member anywhere in GB&I, that is where I would be. I would play it every single day, and I would just absolutely love it. You said, DJ, Dornoch was very, you know, Dornoch's up there, but Prestwick still is number one in my heart. And you know, like we said too, I mean, this is where the first Open Championship was held. So there's so much history that is, you know, deep you know, rooted in the club and in the course. A lot of those same holes that they played back in the Open, I mean, you know, they're still there. A little bit changes to them, but a lot of the greens and what have you are the same. So I think my other kind of fun thing about it, I have the stroke saver here in my hand, and a lot of the holes, I mean, you'll notice this, you know, throughout a lot of the courses, but this is the first time I noticed it when I was playing anywhere, is they give you a good layout of the course and the stroke saver, the course guide, but they give you an ideal line of where to hit. And a lot of times it's off these old steeples or what have you. It's just, you don't get that here. That's kind of why I love it so much, is the quirkiness, how different it is. I think it's just a really special place. It has a special place in my heart.
Well, you're far from alone. I mean, there are so many golfers who have visited Prestwick once or 100 times who share that same affection. And you're right. So much of it ties in to both the quirkiness of the course. It's a word we might kind of use a lot here and over the course of the podcast. And, you know, it kind of fits. But for me, it is more about the history and the connection to the heritage of the game and so forth. And to kind of dive into that history that you talked about, listen, there is a lot of it at Prestwick. So I'm actually going to kind of break this into a couple chunks, because nobody wants to hear me talk for 25 minutes. But that's exactly what it would take in order to tell just a fraction of the story. But the story of Prestwick itself, it really actually begins in St. Andrews, because you have Alan Robertson, who was essentially golf's first true professional. He was sort of the king of clubs, as they called him, and his family, they were in the feathery golf ball business and had been since the 1700s. And you fast forward a little bit to the Victorian era, old Tom comes along, old Tom Morris, and becomes Alan's apprentice, basically, in his shop, making feathery golf balls. And they also became a duo in terms of playing partners. The story goes, they never lost a match when they played together. And golf back then, so much of it revolved around basically just these money matches. It was basically, you know, four guys went out, two teams, they played one another, all kinds of money was wagered. And the winning team might have taken home a cut from, you know, the gentlemen golfers who were out wagering on the various teams. That's kind of how golf got going way back then. And Alan Robertson and old Tom Morris were essentially at the core of it. Well, Alan's business, his entire livelihood, revolved around the feathery golf ball. And along comes the Gutty. The Gutty was essentially golf's first rubber ball. It flew 40 yards further than the feathery. It could be remolded and, you know, and essentially reshaped if it got damaged. It cost a fraction compared to the feathery, which was, you had to take a quote, top hat full of feathers and stuff them into this little leather pouch and then sew it shut. I don't know how they made them. It's really kind of remarkable. The gist is, this, as the story goes, and it's been told a million times, old Tom Morris gets caught by Alan Robertson playing with a Gutty ball. Some say that he it's not like he made an active decision to go out there and play with the Gutty. He had apparently, the one version of the story I heard said that he, you know, he lost his last feathery, happened to have a Gutty laying around, threw it down, played a couple holes, and Alan happens to catch him. Regardless of what happened, they had a falling out. Alan Robertson fires old Tom Morris. Now, how does any of this tie in to Prestwick? Well, old Tom's lost his livelihood. He's got a family to feed. And he has an invitation from James Ogilvie Fairley, is the gentleman's name. And Mr. Fairley and a bunch of golfers on the West Coast had decided they were going to form a golf club. And it was going to be Prestwick. So they invite old Tom to Prestwick. And he essentially sets to task carving out the links out of this raw, gorse-covered land. I read the book, Old Tom Morris, The Colossus of Golf, and it went into great detail about just how painstaking this work was that old Tom underwent trying to make this course. It's impossible to think of. And equally impressive is the fact that back then, moving from St. Andrews to Prestwick was like moving, you know, from the east to west coast of the United States. I mean, this may as well have been another country. All in total, old Tom gets it all together. Prestwick's doing great. Alan Robertson eventually passes away. And now the game of golf is left without a, quote, champion golfer. And so Mr. Fairley gets some money together, purchases a red Moroccan leather belt with a nice silver belt buckle, and they invite the best golfers from around the country to come and decide who is the new champion golfer. And thus the Open Championship is born. There's a whole lot more to the story, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But I think that, Connor, a neat transition here would be, you know, obviously Prestwick has come a long way since 1860 in that first Open. But the modern Prestwick begins just like every other course, and that's at hole number one. And number one at Prestwick, you just kind of have to see it to believe it. Walk us through the opener.
So they actually, you know, it's a good point, DJ. They give you instructions of how to play the first hole. You know, they just tell you right there. It's black and white. It's pretty easy. But I laugh, I joke. But there is a sign literally on the first tee, kind of a fencing that borders, if you will, the first tee. And it says how to play the first. Step one, aim at white marker post. Okay. Step two, hit mid to long iron into landing area. And three, hit a mid to short iron into the green. If golf could be that easy, we'd all play it, right?
Folks, I'm going to kind of chime in here to say that what you couldn't see off screen is that Connor is looking off to the side in his office at a picture of this instructional sign on the first tee at Prestwick. That's how much this place means to the guy. But anyway, carry on.
Absolutely. I mean, really, the fairway is so tight, and it gets really tight the further you go on. There's two bunkers that are about 50 yards from the green. I mean, from the tips, you know, the tee box is literally steps right outside the clubhouse. So there's really not too much of a tips, but it's about a 350 yard hole. So again, you really only need about an iron off the tee. I think last time I played it 2 years ago, I hit a 7 or 6 iron off the tee. And the biggest factor which makes it so tight is the fairway comes narrow, but directly to the right of the tee box is the railroad that goes right through, which is out of bounds. And DJ, you posted a great video a few weeks ago of Prestwick when you were over there last year. And I would encourage everyone to look up, you know, type in Prestwick, Haversham and Baker on YouTube. It'll pop right up and you'll get a good feel of how close the railroad is. I think there was a drone footage from the green back to the tee box, and you can really see, you know, again, how narrow it is. It's not a handshake start hole. You've got to actually hit a very, very precise iron just to get it, you know, in the fairway. And it, you know, if there's any wind or anything moving to the right, I mean, it can be a disaster to start off your round. So, you know, if you're in the fairway or just get it on land, you're A1 and you're ready to go. People, oh, I'm going to hit driver. And it's just, no, just play it as old Tom and, you know, folks design the course, you know, hit it off and, you know, play it up. So it's a great little starter hole. It really kind of magnifies the rest of your round as you have to be precise. Yeah, it's a great, great little starter, DJ.
Yeah, I mean, it perfectly captures Prestwick, right? I mean, you're standing on the first tee. The train is coming back and forth, you know, every 15 minutes or whatever it is. And that red brick wall, I mean, it's literally, like you say, it is touching the tee box and it is touching the right side of the green. And, you know, and it's only about, I'm going to say 5 feet high tops. So, like, I mean, you can stand up against it and look over to the track. So, like you said, anything moving left to right is asking to drop another sort of thing. But I would love to sit one day and just kind of watch. Mostly, I'd like to sit one day during visitor play and watch, you know, to see how many guys like us who fly across an ocean that don't listen to their caddy and are like, I'm going to hit a driver. How many of them end up hitting three off that tee because they didn't read the sign or didn't want to read the sign. But it's really great. I'm going to kind of jump back into the history a little bit to wrap it up, because obviously that first Open opened the door to so much more. And, you know, you mentioned the Red Lion, and I would be remiss not to say that before the first Open in 1860, all of the competitors gathered there, and it is just a short walk up from the first tee. So if you're looking for lunch after or your round or what have you, pop in there. There's a little sign by the door that talks about it, but it's a golf themed pub now, and it's really great. But, you know, they hosted the first Open and then actually hosted the first 12 total at Prestwick. when you pull into the parking lot, the entrance is actually kind of past the clubhouse, and then you sort of double back. As you turn in, there's this big stone marker with a plaque, and that is essentially where the first tee back in 1860 was located, and it commemorates more or less, obviously, the first shot in the Open Championship. Of those first 12 Opens, somebody named Tom Morris won 8 of them. Old Tom won 4. Young Tom Morris, his son, also won 4. Young Tom Morris was kind of golf's first real superstar. He was a kid. He won his first Open at like 17, 18 years of age. He won 4 of them by the age of 21. And was just kind of a remarkable player. The first hole at Prestwick back then, it was a 578-yard par 5. I cannot imagine what, if you had to scale that out into modern era as far as equipment and ball, what that would equate to. It would have to have been like an 800-yard par 5. And he famously made a 3 on it. He holed out for his third shot. He also made the first recorded hole in one in addition to all of his Opens. So he just accomplished so much in such a short period of time. But one of the things that I think is a little funny about the story of those early Opens, the rule back then was the red Moroccan leather belt that I talked about. If you won 3 Opens in a row, you got to keep the belt. Old Tom Morris never could complete the trifecta, so to speak. But young Tom won 3 straight, 1868 to 1870, and he got to keep the belt. So along comes 1871, and it's like nobody realized, oh, hey, we don't have a trophy. And so they just didn't hold the tournament. And I just, this blows my mind that like we had this great thing going. We got the great golfers of the land coming over every year to play in this tournament, and oh man, we don't have a trophy. I guess we just won't have the tournament. I don't understand it, but I guess that's how it was back then. But nevertheless, Prestwick, the Honorable Company of Edinburgh Golfers, and the Royal and Ancient, they got together and they created a new trophy that we know as the Claret Jug. And in 1872. That was the first year that they competed for the Claret Jug, though I should note that I don't think it was actually ready in time for the tournament. So again, just another quirk to the story. But of course, young Tom Morris won that one for his 4th straight. So his name is the first one engraved onto the trophy. But Prestwick continued to host, you know, throughout the years, even though the tournament had moved to essentially a rota of, you know, between those 3 hosts, and even expanded a touch further. It hosted all the way up until 1925, and it was just sort of decided, you know, this is kind of getting a little out of hand. The crowd was enormous. The ground at Prestwick just wasn't meant to host a tournament with thousands and thousands of visitors. And it was eventually decided that despite, you know, Prestwick's long run, you know, it was just no longer, you know, able to adequately host the Open. So Royal Troon kind of took over as the, you know, the member of the rota on the West Coast sort of thing. But Connor, you know, besides the history and the tie to the Open, the course at Prestwick continued to evolve in the years that followed. You know, it started out as a 12-hole course, and they played it 3 times, and that was how they determined the Open. Of course, things had to change, and eventually it did take on the 18-hole layout that we know today as the king of Prestwick. Among the two of us, what are your favorite spots around the modern day Prestwick links?
Yeah, I mean, the third hole is one of my favorites. It is, which is hole named Cardinal, based off of the Cardinal bunker that is kind of essentially in the middle of the hole. It is a par 5, and you know, length depending on the tee box is somewhere between 475 yards all the way up to 530 or so. You're playing a par 5, and you know, par 5s step up at driver, and driver is just not the play on Cardinal. The Cardinal bunker that is essentially right in the middle, you know, the stroke saver says to hit something about 230 yards off the tee. You want to be short, you know, of the Cardinal bunker. You can take it on, but you have to hit a perfectly placed drive. And if you do hit a really good drive and get over the Cardinal bunker, you are going to be either on a downslope, so your second shot either into the green or it's a layup is going to be quite difficult. Whereas if you lay up short of the Cardinal bunker, you can then just wail on maybe a 3-wood or what have you. So, and then get over. But again, you're taking on some, you know, out of bounds area as well. So the first time I played it, I didn't listen to my caddy, hit driver, whatever. And I thought I hit it fine, but you know, the angle I took was just not ideal. And I just couldn't find my golf ball. Well, second time I played it, didn't have a caddy, but I, you know, put my ego to the side, hit an iron off the tee, and then 3-wood up to the green. So, you know, the Cardinal bunker really affects your first shot as well as your second. And in the Cardinal bunker, it's extremely deep. So when you're down there, I mean, it is hard to just get out in general. But there are some railroad ties that are down there. So again, makes it even harder. And this is where kind of Pete Dye got inspired to use kind of that same function on a lot of his courses here in the States, specifically down in the southern regions of the United States. It's just a very difficult hole, even though it's a par 5. But keynote, listen to your caddy. That's all I gotta say, especially playing for the first time. You'd be like, where are we going? And I would say my other favorite hole would be the Himalayas hole, which is a par 3. Like I said before, it is completely blind. So when you're down, down teeing off, I would advise everyone listening to this, I know we don't have any video, but go on YouTube, type in Prestwick, Havisham and Baker. You'll find the video. It was posted a few weeks ago. DJ, that was you hitting. When you're watching the video, you'll know exactly what hole Himalayas is because you're teeing off and you cannot see anything. There's nothing out there other than essentially a wall that's of, I think it's railroad ties. And there's a post and there's a white stripe and a blue stripe. And essentially, depending on where the hole location is and also based off of what tees you're hitting off of, it's kind of the base of the colors of the tees, is where your line is. So I birdied it last time I played. I hit a 4-iron. No clue. You just aim at it and you're like, well, I think I hit it good. We'll walk up and see. And you walk up this, you know, pretty much straight up path up to the top of the hill, and then you can see the green. It's awesome. I love it. And again, you have no clue. You just trust that stripe and that line is where you should go. And again, you can't go in and expect it going to be everything in front of you because it's just not that way there. Again, why I love it and infatuated with the hole so much. And I would say my kind of third hole would be the Alps hole, which is 17. Love-hate relationship with this one, but I'd say it more towards love. It's a very difficult, very narrow driving hole. It's very hilly. So last time I played it, I had a really good drive, but my ball was probably four or so inches below my feet. And again, you're hitting into another blind shot when you're going over the Sahara bunker, which is right before the green. So again, you're hitting kind of a blind shot into it as well. And it just adds to everything at Prestwick. But it's a really special hole. Again, there's really not a right way of playing it. Par feels like a birdie on the hole. I've made my fair share of doubles and, you know, good bogeys. It's just a very difficult hole. But again, you just put your ego to the side, play the course, really enjoy it. And, you know, take in all the history, like what DJ said. I mean, you are walking some fairways that some of our greats in the game have walked prior. Those are kind of my notable holes at Prestwick, but I love them all. It's the best. I could go on and on, but those are kind of my three favorites.
You know, you talked a couple times about listening to your caddy, and I think there is one exception to that rule that you have to make, and it happens to be on number 5, Himalayas, because I don't think that they do this anymore, but at one time, Himalayas was known as the hole that had produced more hole-in-ones probably in the world than anywhere else, because a caddy would, let me say, an enterprising caddy would position themselves up at the top of the hill, and if a shot had come in and wound up within decent range of the pin, they would throw their hands up, it's in the hole, and go crazy. And then because it's completely blind, before the players could make their way around the hill, they'd walk up and give it a little kick into the hole. Naturally, the tips skyrocket at that point. So it's a wonderful business if you can still pull it off. But I think people are perhaps a little wise to it. But You know, another story, you know, you touched just so much on how, you know, special this place is to so many and the place that it still holds. I mean, we're talking a full century removed from the last time it held the Open. And yet still to this day, you know, the reverence that, that folks have for Prestwick. And for me, I think a perfect example of this was several years ago, I was in the pro shop talking with our good friend, David Fleming, the longtime head professional at Prestwick, a pro's pro, if there ever was one. Hat tip to Mr. Fleming and his team. But David and I are talking and I kind of get done and I turn to walk out and I turn around and there's Bob Ford, the longtime head professional at Oakmont and Seminole. And we got to talking and it turned out that Mr. Ford and a group of Seminole members had come over to play a match against some of the members of Prestwick. And that to me just speaks volumes. Because you have a club that here in the States, I'm going to say is probably in the top five in terms of prestige. And here their members have flown across an ocean to go play a match against the members of Prestwick. And I think that just, to me, like I said, I think that just speaks volumes in terms of Prestwick's place and people who are scholars of the game or who just share this deep reverence for the game and its history and its heritage and so forth. Prestwick is at the, it has to be near the top of the list. But Connor, this has been a lot of fun. Before we wrap it up, I know you could keep talking for days on Prestwick. What else do you have to add there?
Yeah, so I would say probably after the round, there is a, when you go see the rock of where the first tee was, if you walk, I mean, literally you park your car or have the driver host, you know, leave you there, see the stone and you walk more towards the beach. There is it's an ice cream shop called Cafe Mancini, I think that's how you pronounce it. They have a sign that says the best ice cream in the world, you know, right? But it is very good. And there's a couple benches right by the ocean. So if you're done by your round, put your sticks in the car, put your sticks in the coach, go get some ice cream, enjoy kind of the beach if it's great weather, by the way. But that's a great spot to go to as well. And the other kind of thing that a lot of our members will like to do is enjoy the Prestwick Experience, which is an option. This is hosted through the club on Wednesdays and Fridays. It is usually the tee times are 8 to 9 a.m. So it's a regular round of golf, but you also are served a 3-course lunch in the dining room post golf, and coat and tie is required in the clubhouse as well. So that is a, you know, experience that some of our members will want to do, and I'm sure that the members at Seminole and Oakmont did the same when they were there too. But you know, like I said multiple times in the podcast, you know, everything is not going to be right in front of you. Trust your caddy. You know, get the course guide if you're out by yourself, because you will literally will need it, because you will just not know where you were going if you've played Tobacco Road in North Carolina before. It's the same thing, because Tobacco Road, you just don't know where anything is. It's hard to play it if you don't have a caddy or play with someone that hasn't played it before. It's the same thing. You just won't know, especially on those few holes that I kind of referenced there. So push your ego aside, really enjoy it. And, you know, definitely go to the Red Lion afterwards and cheers our grandfathers in the game.
Absolutely. Well, a second to that all around, especially the ice cream part. But that is going to draw this one to a close. As usual, we will note to some additional resources in the show notes. If you have any questions about Prestwick or elsewhere around Scotland, send us a DM or shoot us an email, golf@haversham.com. But otherwise, thank you for tuning in. We will be back again soon with another episode. But until then, we wish you plenty of golf at its finest and life at its best.